Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com. Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello everyone, welcome to the Red Men TV. It is the final word show. Liverpool beat Brighton by 2-1, heart-stopping end of the game. We'll talk about all that in a moment, but first we are brought to you in association with The Athletic. It's theathletic.co.uk/RedmenTV if you want to get 50% off your yearly subscription to their writing and their podcast. Some brilliant stuff on there right now, including the likes of James Pearce, Si Hughes, and as mentioned, a whole new world of podcasts that they've opened up to as well. It's free for the first month and all that, so go and check it out. It's very, very good. Right, guys, hi. Everyone suitably recovered from the weekend?
I'm fine, mate. Thanks for asking. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. But here's the thing, Steve. It was a mad end to the game of football.
It was.
It made me really enjoy the whole thing. It's weird. Now, this is like maybe it's borderline sadistic, but I genuinely loved that end of the football match.
Okay. Good for you. Not so much.
Here's the thing. Now that I know we won.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
I'm not saying I enjoy worlds where Liverpool have got 10 men and they're under the caution you might throw away and that might damage your lead at the top of the league, blah, 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 blah. That was a fucking shit game of football. It was dead boring. And then all of a sudden we're in a world where we're smacking balls into the far corner of the pitch. Like the most un-Liverpool thing I've ever seen. But it was great.
It's made what would have been a forgettable win over Brighton. You will now, whatever happened this season, we will now remember the day that we beat Brighton. So, I get you in that point of view. At the time, I was happy for just a boring game for once. Yeah. I had lots on. It's a busy time of year. Saturday was a bit mad, and I was thinking just 90 whatever minutes of my life, I'll just sit down and watch Liverpool. And at 2-0, I was like, this is exactly what I needed. Mm-hmm. And then it wasn't exactly what we needed.
But I don't know how it works, but I'm not suggesting you watch the game on an illegal stream.
Absolutely not.
But I don't think, and I don't know how this works, because obviously there's people who do this up for every Liverpool game, but I don't think Liverpool ever have a relaxing time when you watch a game on a stream, because it's always the most stressful experience.
Yeah, no, because it's illegal to watch streams in Britain, I actually have to fly
out of the country to
that's what I'm saying. I was busy. I had like a flight to catch, airport security to get through. It wasn't ideal.
Just rowed out to international waters, picked it up
like a pirate radio station. No, yeah. Having said that, mate, if nothing else, it's character building.
Yeah.
For us and for the players.
Yeah.
And to be fair, obviously it's late down the road, but we are coming to it. But I thought the way they dealt with the adversity of being down was really, really positive.
Yeah. The BBC's Emma Sanders. Hello.
Hello.
We must have so much character by now, if Steve's right.
God, yeah.
How much character can you have if this was like a role playing game? We'd be maxed out, and it's 14 games into the season.
Mentality monsters.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was really important that they dug in at the end. Obviously, everyone wants a clean sheet, and still didn't get that.
No one more than Alison Becker.
Yeah. Well, that's it. Alison was just like, look, this game needs spicing up. I'll step up. Why not? It was mad. I was doing the live text actually on the BBC website, and it was crazy because the amount of people that were in there, and I just kind of, I didn't know what was going on. I just put in the goal entry like, I have no idea what's just gone on, but Alison's just got sent off. There's a free kick that's just been taken. Like, Adrian was just stood still. Nobody knows what's going on. But hey, Liverpool haven't got a clean sheet.
Absolutely, absolutely mad. We'll talk about all those points in a bit. But Patrick Tumpain coming to us from Portland, Oregon. Thank you very much for joining us.
Pleasure to be here.
You'll be able to give us all the inside scoop on Nike, presumably.
In the 10 minutes from my house.
Amazing. Yeah. What did you make of the game then? It was another example, ultimately, though, of us. A game that probably should have been quite relaxing, and it was just insanely stressful.
Yeah. I think that at 2-0, it felt like it was going to be 3 or 4 before too long. I think I fall more into Ross's party. Steve, sorry. I've just met Ross before. I got no sleep last night.
You got Ross on the brain.
I don't know
who that's more insulting for.
Yeah.
Probably me. That's fine.
Never live that down.
No, it's absolutely fine.
But no, I do agree with Steve. I think I was hoping for 3-4-0, first game at Anfield, wanted to just enjoy it, sing, have a great time. And in the end, I think the excitement of, you know, how everything unfolded was probably a more memorable experience.
Absolutely.
So
we celebrated
torn.
The full-time whistle more than we celebrated the ease of Virgil van Dijk's goal. Yeah. And then tells you everything.
Used to him scoring there. It's like, oh, there's our centre-back. He's just scored 2.
Just got all powered header in. It's absolutely fine. I just want to talk, before we get into the footy, about the first 6 minutes and chatting justice for the 96. Steve, it's been a weird week off the back of all this. And One thing that I noticed, and I've been thinking this recently, actually, we don't really do the anything about the 96 on the cop anymore. You know what I mean? It's like, I think people would finally sort of not put it to bed, because it's never going anywhere. So it's part of the fabric of this city and the people and the football club and all that kind of stuff. Like, but I think it was telling of the it showed how important I need to be careful how I word this, of course, but obviously the not guilty verdict in the week, how important that, how bad a thing that was, and how important the justice and all that remains.
I think it's actually the families who at the time, wasn't it, after the inquest, they didn't want the whole ceremony at Anfield anymore on the anniversary and stuff like that. It's more of a private thing now, which I understand for them as well, you know. Mm-hmm. I think after the inquest, I think it was almost the point where everyone kind of thought, oh, that's that. What now they've said the unlawful killing, it's a matter of time before X person, whoever he or she is, mm-hmm. or the people are now prosecuted for what happened. And then slowly but surely things have dripped and dropped, and there's been the odd battle here and there, and it's kind of gone under the radar to an extent. And then it was just a bolt from the blue, and like you say, we have to be careful with what we say and what we don't say and stuff. But I thought that the weekend, I'll be honest, I'll be surprised if anything ever happens. I think that might be the end of it, to be honest, in terms of the legal pursuit of it. But it was almost like a be there for the families.
Yeah.
Because it must be absolutely just heartbreaking and devastating. In fact, I spoke to a couple of people who were close to it, and they had, it's like another kick in the teeth.
Yeah.
And they're blaming a wide variety of things for it. So I thought, again, I wasn't in the ground, I'll be honest, but it sounded to me like it was very much a support for the families, rather than, because I don't think, unfortunately, I hope I'm wrong, but I don't think anything's good. I think that might be the end of any legal proceedings. So now it's a case of just looking after these people, because it's going to be, they're never going to get the closure, and that must be like absolutely devastating for them.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think these people have been such an inspiration to all of us for so long in the way they conducted themselves, and it felt like the very least we could do in the ground was draw attention to it and remind the world where we stand and how we stand behind the families and the survivors, etc. But brilliant. Absolutely made me very, very proud. Let's get back to the game. Emma, obviously the big talking point going into the game was the lack of Fabinho. He was going to be missing anyway because he was suspended for the game. Obviously, we now know he could be out for up to 8 weeks. There was a little bit of debate as to who was going to get the nod in the sixth role. It could have been Gini Wijnaldum. Adam Lallana would have been pretty much a straight swap. We saw him play away at Villa Park. But Jordan Henderson back in that role. You know, he should really be our second choice six. What did you think of his performance?
Yeah, I wasn't surprised that he started in the six. I wanted to see Wijnaldum in there, I'll be honest with you. And that's not because I don't think Henderson is good at it. I think it takes away Henderson's strengths when he plays in a more attacking role. Mm-hmm. So I think when you're losing Fabinho, you're effectively losing half of another player, because one of those other midfielders has to sacrifice their game essentially to drop into that number six role. But yeah, I thought he played well. I thought he had a good game. Like I said, it's whenever he's in that role, it's always a bit of a 6-7 out of 10 performance. It's never anything amazing.
Well, you know what it is for me is that you get so much criticism, and we've been so effusive in our praise for him as in a more mm-hmm. advanced position since he shifted there, that I don't know what I was expecting. Like, I somehow expected it to be horrendous.
Yeah.
But you're right, there was never a problem with Jordan Henderson playing in the six. It's just that Fabinho's better.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
all
and
it is.
I completely agree with that. And I mean, I'm a fan of Henderson, and I've said this before, like plenty of times. I've probably come out and said, like, I love Henderson. I think he's a brilliant player for this football club. Whether that's in the six or in an attacking role, I think he does a job in either position.
Yeah.
But obviously, you know, in that more attacking role, he's definitely better. But yeah, he just goes about his work and he just gets the job done. But yeah, like I said, it's nothing magnificent. It's not Fabinho level. But, you know, Fabinho, in my opinion, is the best defensive midfielder probably in Europe on form at the moment, definitely in the Premier League. So when you lose him, there's obviously going to be a difference.
I think there's a couple of factors at play, isn't there, Patrick, is that Oxlade-Chamberlain's probably the most deserving of a place in the side at the moment, in his, you know, in his form. Do we then want to... The reason Henderson probably ends up in the six is because Ox is better on the right-hand side of the midfield. That's probably all it boils down to. Me and Chris were talking in the build-up to the game. I think if Naby Keita was in the form that Ox was in, I think Genie probably plays the six and you keep Henderson on the right.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I do think one thing that we noticed watching the game from the Anfield Road end was between Verge and Hendo in the six, there's so much leadership right there. You could see them dictating the play incredibly well, and it's incredible to watch that in person. You don't see a lot of it on the telly from the States. But I really think that Genie's probably a better fit for that position. His ball retention is incredible, and that's something that we really need when we're, you know, playing a more possession-based game. But it was interesting because we really didn't, you know, possess that much of the ball throughout the match. But Ox was incredible to watch, and his pressing up front in the first half in particular was mind-blowing, and it was incredible to see, like, between him and Firmino just closing down every angle over and over again. It was exceptional. So I was really impressed with how he's been playing.
I think it's vindicated, you know, in that regard. We talked about this, is that this spell of games, you don't really... You don't need Fabinho. Is you know, every team needs Fabinho because he's brilliant.
Yeah.
But the point is that you're going to play a lot of teams, and these are probably played more football than a lot of teams will play against us.
Yeah.
Probably more footy than Everton are going to play against us, probably more footy than Watford will play against us, etc., etc. And in those games, there's nothing wrong with having a bit more of a culture. A slightly more attacking number six in that role. Henderson, I thought, covered it well, and again, it allowed Oxlade-Chamberlain to be one of the best players on the pitch.
Yeah, I actually, again, watching it on legal matters. is that a lot of the time Wijnaldum just dropped in there anyway.
Yeah.
So a lot of the time it was almost like a rotating six. And there was a time when Henderson goes out and Chamberlain dropped in. So it was more like the old style of where it kind of done jobs.
Yeah.
There was definitely times when Wijnaldum was just playing number six. So I don't know what the training's been, or, you know, because Klopp admitted, didn't he? We've had no training.
Mm-hmm.
We played Napoli, recovery days, we're playing Brighton.
Yeah.
So even before Everton, he said they're going to get one session. So maybe he's just gone, we'll just go back to the tried and tested. Yeah. Where Jordan will know what he's doing. Chamberlain goes there, Wijnaldum goes there. Maybe the plan could be for a Lallana or a Wijnaldum. They're probably all going to get a go at different stages. What I would say is that what Fabinho does better than, like, much better, is that not only does he play DM in our half, he plays DM in their half.
Yeah.
He makes it really difficult for teams to get out. So when the second balls and stuff, I mean, sometimes we're holding the line, but we're holding it in their second third of their half.
Yeah.
I don't think Henderson does that quite well. I thought it was too easy for Brighton to get out. And the same for Wijnaldum. I don't think it's a massive criticism of them. It's just highlighting how good Fabinho is in that. At the time, I thought it was, you know, Brighton, we mentioned before, Chamberlain and Firmino pressing really well, and two passes and they were out, where usually I would expect that's where Fabinho would be nipping in and winning the ball back. So that was the major difference. Other than that, I don't think it was a huge, notable drop-off.
I wouldn't look at that result and say that result ends up being that result because you've not got Fabinho on the pitch necessarily. You could look at it. There might be guys who are fully into that, you know, there might be something underlying in the stats or whatever that, you know, experts might be able to pull apart and go, well, you can see that this, but, you know, for me, on the surface, it's not his fault we concede.
No.
And he actually plays a pivotal role in making sure that we don't crumble in that last 15 minutes as well. I think he really upped his game. Let's talk about the opening goal then. Virgil technically starts the move. by fouling their guy on the halfway line and getting away with it.
Yeah, I was trying to think of this earlier. I can't picture that.
He just basically jumps into his back.
Yeah, he just throws out. It's Connolly, isn't he? Just throws him on the floor. And then 3 seconds later, we get a foul.
And Trent, you know, once again, he's just unreal, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, every time Trent puts a ball in the box, there's going to be some kind of impact from it, whether or not it's, you know, the keeper having to come out, punch it, or... I just think when you've got somebody who can put in crosses like that, you're going to get so many chances. And obviously, him and Robertson are creating more goals than anyone else in Europe, and you can see why. And Van Dijk just times his jump so well. And he does this every single time. It's not like it's 1 in 3. It's every single time he attacks the ball, his jump is just timed to perfection. So as soon as he got the better of the defender, you just knew that it was going to be in the back of the net.
I suppose, Patrick, you'll have seen it better than I from the other end of the ground, but because it felt surreal for us. It was like one of those moments of like, because the way he heads it, you know, and
it took so long, didn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It was a bizarre one. It was a real like, oh, has that gone in? Are we celebrating? Okay, mm-hmm. And I think this is how the game kind of felt to me. Because we scored the two headers, it was, for something that's very difficult to do, it felt too easy, if that makes sense.
Well, we did have an incredible view of it. The interesting thing, right at the beginning of the set piece, he stood about a yard offside, just waiting for the line to push up. And again, the quality that Trent puts in, and I think it was Mo that runs over the ball, gives us a little, the defenders don't know exactly when to go. They move too early. And when he jumped, my wife Jen has an incredible video of it, actually. It looks like it's in slow motion, the whole thing. You see him come up, and you're like, oh, this might happen. And then it's flying, you're like, oh, it's still coming, and the keeper missed it, and it's dropping under the bar. It was absolutely...
He hangs in the air, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't look real when you're watching it in real time or on the video. Incredible scenes, reminded me of like seeing so many of your videos over the years of celebrating the stands. I'm like, I've got one of those now. It was fucking incredible.
I actually think the point of the step over is crucial in that... That's what sends Brighton. I think it highlights how good Liverpool are in those situations. Usually we're really good at holding that line. Brighton just felt a bit. So if Lovren and Van Dijk were in acres of space, because they, as soon as Mo steps over, two went and then everyone else stayed. So all of a sudden it was just so, it was like, now Van Dijk has got a 3-yard jump. No one's stopping him. Yeah. The only way this isn't going in is if he misses the header, if he messes the header up, because Brighton, as good as they were with the ball and stuff, I thought their organisation of set pieces, both of them, was pretty ordinary. And it must be so hard as a defender to know, Jesus Christ, look at this fella. I am gonna have to go early.
Yeah.
And as soon as Salah steps, they've gone. And then, like I say, he was offside. He was standing offside. The fact that he drops in, it goes. They were a mess. They were so flat-footed. I actually thought, watching the first time, maybe he's headed it at the defender's head, and that's kind of what's made it loop. But no, it's literally, it's like a lobbed header into the goal. It was really well taken, but it was just, again, our set pieces now, it was just such a threat. And I'm not sure, you might, looking back, racking my brains, like, have we had a better set piece taker than him?
The only thing that I was thinking was Gerrard in 13-14. I think he gets double figures of assists that season, and so many of them are corners and free kicks and stuff. And that's the closest we've got. Oh, obviously, we had this last season as well. But you can win a game of football. We've just won a game of football because of how good we are at set pieces.
Well, our last 3 goals have all been from centre-backs. So. But I think there's a bit of a fear factor as well. Every time Trent or Robbo gets the ball, you can see the opposition sort of panicking a little bit, thinking, oh, like, when do we go? Like, are they going to do an in-swinger? Like, oh, and they just don't really know what to do, because they know that the quality of the ball is going to cause them problems, and they know they're going to have to make a split decision. And then when you got Van Dijk walking up to you and he's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to come to this corner, you just go, nah, I'm done.
But this is the thing about the set pieces, is that was a game where Brighton have got in there and they thought, oh, we'll make it difficult for Liverpool. Yeah. We've got our brand of football. We're looking at this spell of fixtures, and the big concern is, where do we get in our rest? And, and particularly on the back of the Napoli result, there's a disappointment there, that it means we're going to have to go big against Salzburg in a week's time. This is another way to get minutes in your legs. is because if you can win games without having to, without having to exert yourself, I mean, like, it's not quite as simple as, oh, well, just do that again. Just whip a corner directly into Virgil van Dijk's head, because it isn't as simple as that. But that, you know, and we'll come into this in a second, but it made the game, we won the game from two set pieces, basically.
Yeah, and it takes the pressure off the front three as well, because they've got such a reputation now where everyone expects them to score constantly every single game or get an assist every single game. And when you've got centre-backs like Lovren as well, who's good in the air, but Lovren and Van Dijk, who can just pitch in with, like you say, these important goals from set pieces, it does take that pressure off that they don't always have to deliver. They don't always have to create something out of nothing.
Yeah.
You've got that to fall back on, and that's big.
You need those, don't you, Patrick? I think back to 13-14. I think that the Arsenal game where we battered them at Anfield, it's skirtle headers that kick things on. You know, that's talking about breaking. In fact, Arsenal this season is the same thing, isn't it? It's a ball into the box and scoring headers, scoring from set plays and crosses and that kind of thing. It means you're not searching for the perfect goal.
Yep.
You'll take a goal wherever it comes.
I really enjoy centre back header goals. Yeah. I don't know what it is about. And when Lovren scores, it's, you know, I still think back to the Europa League against Dortmund, which is fucking phenomenal. But yeah, I think the most important thing is the pressure that it takes off the front three, because there's been a lot of talk week in, week out about they're not clicking together, you know. But the beautiful thing about Liverpool at the moment is, even if the front three aren't linking up in the way that maybe we've seen them do before, we know they're capable of. You know, if Salah's off it, Mane steps up. If Mane's off it, maybe Firmino comes in. If he's out, maybe, you know, Ox pulls out a glove midfield, or Hendo or Genie at these important moments. And then if you can have Virg step up and, you know, get two for us early, we were coasting, you know.
Well, that's the point. Brighton must be thinking, right, we've got a good handle on this. You know, and to be fair, I'd forgotten at the time, because of the way the game pans out and recency bias and all that, we were actually pretty good in the first half. You know, we created chance after chance. But they kept us at bay. But then all of a sudden, you know, you go, oh, great, we've got Salah, we've got Firmino, we've got Mane handled, and then Virgil just pops up and bangs it, and you just go, And that was the reason. You're right, in addition to that, and it goes back to the chat about Oxlade-Chamberlain, there was a couple of times where the three are linking up, and then, well, they're going nowhere. Oh, and look, out of nowhere, here comes Oxlade-Chamberlain arriving on the edge of the box, and all of a sudden you've got four guys who you've got to deal with as well.
Yeah. Well, there was that one move in particular. I think there was like three or four just really intricate passes where
Salah,
I think Bobby laid it off for Ox at the edge of the box, and the keeper makes a good save. There was some incredible football in that game, and I think that we are so dangerous on left back, right back, our centre backs, our midfield. We are a fucking exceptional team.
And this is the difference, isn't it? They, Klopp referenced it in one of his press conferences in the week about how, you know, saying you're spreading the goals out more. And he said, well, you know, not too long as everyone said we were reliant on the front three. We need to be, you know, they could do with getting back into a little bit of goal scoring form. But the mark of truly great sides get goals from all over the place.
Yeah, absolutely. And Van Dijk should score loads because, again, maybe I'm just a bit simple. But in fact, I know I am a bit. But, but I just think if the cross is good for him, he is going to win that ball.
Yeah.
And then we'll see what happens. So, you know, that's how we score against Palace. He makes a run, and obviously there's a bit of a scramble. We had the goals the other day. You mentioned Lovren was in acres of space against Napoli. We've had Mane at the front post at Villa. Not only will Van Dijk just draw attention, so he makes it easier for others. Yeah. That second goal, I just don't know how you stop that. Because the ball is that good and he's so big and strong. Unless you try and block him off, you know, because he loses his marker rather easily. But that's because he's like, he's not only massive, he's so strong and he's so quick.
Yeah.
Like, Lewis Dunk is a pretty good Premier League centre-half, and Van Dijk is away from him in a second. It's one dummy, and he's ran, and he's got 2 yards. He's running onto that ball. It's just a goal every single time. And that's you mentioned before, scoring goals is the hardest thing in footy. That was pretty much as easy as it gets. And as an opposition, not only with your plan to play Liverpool, not only do you have to work so hard on, well, what are we going to do to nullify these lot? Oh, by the way, there's the midfield who are chipping in. But by God, we're going to spend a few hours on set pieces. Yeah. How are we going to deal with Virgil van Dijk?
And you have it in your head as well, not to give away free kicks.
Yeah.
Not to give away set pieces.
How
so, like, when you're defending, like, in your own box, and you're like, oh, I need to put this out for a corner, but if I put this out for a corner, they've got a very high chance of scoring.
No, absolutely, and you're right on that. This is where it's going to come into our own, I think, in this spell of the season, was because, you know, it's the training thing. There's no time to train once you hit December, and that's true of all of a sudden. That's true of every club.
Yeah.
So there is no extra, whereas Liverpool get to rely on muscle memory in these things. Mm. And that's the thing about Van Dijk, look, 3 goals now, you know, 14 games into the season. Your best centre-half should be scoring 5 a season, I think.
Yeah.
I think that's a decent benchmark. But actually, you know, again, you think to Skrtel 13, 14, I think to Vincent Kompany, I think to John Terry's, would get more than that in a really, really good season. And that is just another, it's another weapon.
You mentioned about, you know, no training, I think is a point, but also fatigue at this stage of the season. That's what you can switch off.
Yeah.
It will only take you a second as a defender. So Van Dijk just drops one shoulder and he's gone. And that, you know, when the weather's going to be god awful and it's going to be freezing and it must be so easy to lose your concentration for a second.
Yeah.
Our set plays now, I mean, that's what's got us in the position where we are. We haven't been, to be honest, mate, we haven't been amazing in any game. I thought Salzburg for an hour or so, well, half was as good as we get.
Yeah.
But we haven't been, other than maybe even City, we were pretty good, but
not across the 90 minutes. Yeah. We've had good spells, but.
But then. Not. I'm not saying the set piece of bail on us out because they're a legit option.
Yeah.
But they are. It's just such a weapon to have in your armoury when you've got probably the best crosser. Him and Kevin De Bruyne are the two best crossers in the league. Mm. And then you've got a centre half like that big fella who's just unmarkable. I mean, I'd be surprised if he doesn't go up towards 8 goals this season because, again, I don't know what you can do other than foul him to stop us scoring that goal.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was interesting in his post-match interview as well. Virgil was saying that he always comes up against their best header of the ball. So he says, like, oh, I'll always come up against the tallest and the best header. So that in itself takes something away. Yeah. And Mane and Bobby are very, very good in the air.
Yeah.
So when you've got, like, centre-backs like Lovren and Van Dijk who are so dangerous that automatically take away the two best defenders in terms of, you know, clearing set pieces, you've then got the likes of Bobby and Mane who are still extremely dangerous in the air.
Yeah,
and also, you know, we might get 10 of those a game. We only have to score off one.
Yeah.
You know, so we might get like 6 corners and 4 free kicks. And at some point, you would bank on the fact that he's going to get free or someone's going to happen. And I think that's what it is. It's just you just keep, it's relentless. It's more relentless.
He nearly scored a hat-trick. If Gino Wijnaldum didn't tackle him in the box, he nearly scored the greatest hat-trick goal of centre-half's ever scored by bringing it down.
I would have got so excited.
Yeah, absolutely. They had a really good spell in the back end of the half, actually. What, you know, we're 2-0 up. I think it's probably 10 plus minutes at the end of the half where they were maybe the better team. I've heard a few people discussing this. Were we guilty of not kicking on?
Maybe. I think Klopp said after the match that, you know, and before the match, that Brighton aren't really a club that will play differently against different teams. They're good on the ball, and I don't necessarily think it was us taking our foot off the gas. Maybe to an extent, you know, we're up 2-0, scored pretty easy goals, as Steve said. But, you know, I think it was probably a combination of maybe just a little bit of thinking that this is going to be a bit of an easy ride and quality that Brighton brought in. They were impressive on the ball.
I think it's not so much as letting our foot off the gas as not putting our foot on their throats a bit, Steve. You know, there's not necessarily a need to do this. It feels like there's a need to do this because ultimately they get a goal and we end up with a really nervy end of the game. And because we're not keeping clean sheets, makes it a bit more, but also no one scores 2 goals against us.
No,
often, you know, really,
especially not Anfield.
You know, exactly. So,
a lot can happen in the next 3 years, like a chatbot, maybe your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, United Healthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Bearing in mind, when I talk about the fitness and the exertions and all that, it's understandable. It's a little frustrating because I think another goal means that game could have been completely and utterly
dead and buried. Again, I don't think it was a lack of anything like that. We had chances. You know, Oxlade-Chamberlain probably scores, if not for a really good block. You know, we had other. I actually thought they defended quite well from that point on in terms of in their own box. They were in there quite a bit and they were getting a toe in here, like say, a good block from Dunk there. So I don't think Liverpool stopped playing. I think what the worry was for me was that I could tell that they were fresher than us. You could tell that from ball one. And it makes sense. We've just been run ragged by Napoli. So I was thinking, it's going to be by the end of this game. I imagine Brighton are going to be seeing quite a bit of the ball. You know, we're going to have to make subs. We did look a bit leggy, which again is understandable. If we get that, if that Chamberlain one goes in, which it looks like it's doing, you know, Matt Ryan made a good save, didn't he, from Firmino as well. It's a different story. I think Klopp referenced in his press conference, journalist there, you know what these are called. I think someone asked Klopp, was it just the case of not finishing your chances? And Klopp was actually quite snarky. He went, well, what else was it? And then the guy goes, well, you know, it isn't like you're worried about creating chances. And Klopp went, no, we created chances. It was just the last little bit. So I don't think it was it's easy to say, oh, Liverpool got complacent, Liverpool did this. I actually think they were a little bit unlucky, a bit tired, and sometimes there's another team on the pitch.
I think you're right. It's worth considering, isn't it, Emma, when you look at the results of all the other top teams at the weekend, you know, and how, Spurs pick up points, of course, but they actually come close to...
They were knackered at the end of that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Chelsea obviously falling apart as well. Man City struggling against Newcastle. We forget this when it's going well, and it's the reason why there's meltdowns from fan bases and whatever at this time of season every season, because people forget how difficult it is to play two games a week.
Yeah, I completely agree with that, and I agree with what you're saying. I think Klopp even said in his press conference, I think it was last week, he said, we can't play intense all the time, and that's where our games adapted a lot from last season, because last season you could see that you were sort of... Like towards the end of the season, it was a real, real struggle, and it was like fighting and fighting and fighting every game to try and get a result. Whereas now, even when they did score, it was a bit nervy. But again, I was like, I can't see them scoring here. I just can't see Brighton getting a second here. And
I think it's look at the all round game plan. You're two goals up. You know they are. Yeah. We're not really dominating the game in the same way, but we're two goals up. At home, we bring off Firmino, we'll bring off Salah and Firmino. The game plan's being enacted absolutely perfectly, and it wouldn't shock you if we, you know, in any normal set of circumstances, we probably win that two, or maybe you nick one more on the counter when they throw the kitchen sink at you at the end. If
this is
do.
Where you miss Firmino, by the way.
Yeah,
it's that last bit there where, like you say, when you've got that danger of maybe conceding a goal on the counter, that's where you need him in there to just...
Moreover, I think we miss a goalkeeper using...
Well, yeah, that too.
...as opposed to something else. We actually miss Mignolet in that situation. He'd have been stuck on a six-yard line. Not a problem in any way, shape or form. Lovren sweeps in, tackles him, and we're not talking about it as a problem.
It's those liquid tights. He just wanted to get them out.
You know what I think the issue is? It's his hair. Since he stopped gelling the hair, he looks a bit scruffy. And he's having a couple of more scruffy moments. I think he needs to have a look in the mirror.
Smarten up.
Just sharp
fix up, look sharp.
Yeah, yeah. Fashion advice from Steve.
Hair advice from Steve.
Listen, as a man with no hair, I feel like it's a shame when someone wastes hair.
Because
I know how precious hair can be. And I think, you know, get your hair gel back out and get yourself back looking sharpish. And you'll probably just, you know, look or feel good. Because
fix up, look
one, day he might, yeah. one day he might not, again, he might not have any and he'll miss it. And all those days when I have bad hair days, I look back going, I wish I'd have done a little bit more.
No, but no, I think
you're right, Steve. Are you okay?
he does look a touch unruly. He's got proper better, doesn't he?
Unkempt.
Yeah.
Which is ironic because he's a keeper.
I mean, he still looks fine to me.
Unkempt. he's a very good looking guy. What I would say on that is he doesn't have himself in a bad place.
Yeah, it's the nature of the goalkeeper, because we saw it a couple of times in the game, and actually against Napoli as well. He's very front foot, he likes to be on the edge of his area. He's a sweeper keeper, that's what you expect. But I didn't realise it truly until I watched it back. He's like 2 metres outside
his body. Yeah.
Which is fine, but it's because he stops. If his momentum just runs him through that ball, I think he gets caught up because he wonders, is Lovren going to get it? He kind of, he stops, he's on his back foot, and then he goes and he shifts. If he'd have just either stayed or just absolutely ran out.
Well, he can't, if he stays, they score.
Yeah.
Because he is getting robbed.
And I think this is the thing, I was thinking about this earlier, and I don't want to criticise Lovren because he's technically not done anything wrong, but if that's Van Dijk going back, I think he stays on his line because I think he thinks Van Dijk's going to win that ball.
Yeah,
but the fact that it's Lovren, I think he thinks he's not...
He does get caught under.
Yeah, I think, he's not going to get the length here on his header if he does get there first. He's probably not going to get there first. I'm going to have to come out here. So I do think the fact that it is Lovren over Van Dijk, there's a bit of indecision there and he thinks, I've got to come out. And yeah, he's way out of his box.
He gets himself into a pickle, doesn't he? Yeah. I think it's fair. Look, I think I've been there. I've been there many times. I'm normally self-inflicted, terrible positioning, trying to be too clever.
Is that the difference between you and Alison?
That is the fun. That's the one similarity. So every goalkeeper is we've all done something stupid like that.
It's just instinct because he knows he's out of the box. Mm-hmm. And to be honest.
No, but it's the instinct why goalkeepers break bones at home because they try to do things. Your instinct is to just do something. It's just stupid. The ball's that close to him. It's a very difficult instinct. And this is Bernie Mears playing at the lowest possible level of football. But if your entire existence is getting your hands to footballs, then it's very difficult to not do that. Put your hand up towards the footballer.
The mistake is the stutter step, isn't it? That's where he loses everything. Like I say, if he just runs out, remember, was it Bournemouth when he just ran out and just headed it away and just cleaned some fella out?
Yeah.
At where he probably gets the ball.
But the problem is, or
if he doesn't, you know, he probably clears their striker out and gets a yellow.
By the time he gets there, because you're right, was the time and stuff, he's got no choice. He's either got to let him be lobbed, or he's got to handle
it. Stop it.
You know, that's... I don't know. I don't know whether... we were joking, Patrick. I don't know whether he's decided I'm just not conceding the goal here.
Yeah.
Because it's...
It wouldn't surprise me.
It's arcing towards the goal. Mm-hmm. We'll never know whether Lovren would have got there or not because he's certainly covering. His run-ups left him with a tough decision to make there.
Yeah. I've played keeper on a futsal team and I've done that exact thing before. Again, not... close to the same level, but the instincts kick in and your brain shuts off. You see the ball, it looks like it's going in. From my perspective, it looked like it was going to go.
Yeah.
It looked like right when he actually chips it, Lovren was almost kind of forced out. It would have been very difficult, I think, for him to get back in time.
That being said, it's only 2-1 and you've still got your goalkeeper on the pitch if he decides to.
Again, it's instinct. I don't think he
means
it.
And he played against Everton.
It's just instinct to go. I don't blame him for the handball because that isn't a thought process. Yeah, that is just his natural instinct of, like you said, ball, catch ball. That's his job.
Yeah.
It was the fact that he didn't make his mind up quick enough one way or the other. He's either on his line in the box or he's go. I don't think, again, you play goalie, I haven't, but once you go, I don't think you can ever stop.
No, you're right.
You can go back. You can go backwards, but you can't stop and just stand still.
I don't think, to be fair, I'm not even sure. I think he's come out. He's come out too early,
and that again,
that's part and parcel of how he plays the game. It was just a very awkward one. You know, it's a bizarre one to watch how the lad's suddenly in and Lovren's suddenly in loads of trouble.
He came out of his box.
I think like maybe 10 minutes before in that game, and like cleared it. I think with his foot, and it went out for a throw-in.
Yeah.
And I was watching that thing. You're like, why has he come out there? Because he didn't need to.
Yeah.
So I just think he was like...
It's part and parcel. You're going to play a high line and you need to cover that space in behind, and he's very, very good at doing that. But you're right, it was just a very odd situation. He's come out too far. You're right, you've either got to come out... That being said, if you do commit and come out, there might be no chance of him getting to it because of the way it is. And all of a sudden, you're another, what... 10 yards outside your box.
Yeah.
Completely in no man's land.
I think you could foul the lad though and not get sent off. Like I think if he just runs out, I think there's a good chance that he can kind of just clatter into him.
Yeah.
And because Lovren's on the cover, you might get sent off because some refs will. And there's Martin Atkinson, so he'd probably show him a straight red and then ban him for a month.
Yeah.
But you might get a yellow, you know what I mean? It's one of them.
Right.
It's a bad error.
You've mentioned the name. Let's do it.
He's a prick, isn't he, Paul?
Yeah, I was going to use the C word, but I feel like there's a lot of pressure on there. Don't use it now. I can feel Emma's eyes burning into the side
of the BBC. Yeah, I was like, you need to take that out. I said to Tom, I was like, that needs to come out.
can't call Martin Atkinson the C word.
The BBC, mate.
You just can't. Right, I don't like that word anyway. It's not a nice word.
Fair enough.
Martin Atkinson is terrible. And right, so Patrick, me and Chris were talking. We did the instant match reaction, and Chris's reaction was: referee's blown the whistle. You know, we've caught teams out in similar situations in the past. So, and from that perspective, I agree. The referee, to the letter of the law, the referee's blown his whistle, and so the game, you know, the ball's after. Brighton are perfectly within their right to take that. That I don't think that's up for debate. And fair play to Dunk for having the vision to be very able clever. To do that. Streaky. It's a very, very clever move, very, very clever free kick. And he deserves the goal for that level of ingenuity. However, Adrian has just come from, but he apparently didn't have a goalie shirt. Apparently he was just wearing a t-shirt. He had no preparation. He wasn't warmed up in any way, shape or form. He's come onto the pitch. He's setting the wall. And we'll talk about the wall thing in a second, but I can't help but feel that a little bit of common sense in the referee. I mean, maybe like why should I mean the Brighton argument is why should he? But for fuck's sake, he's just come on the pitch. He's not said a word to his teammates. He's trying to organise the wall, and he's in the middle of doing that.
Mm.
Actor blows the whistle, and less than 2 seconds later, Dunk strikes the ball. So it's not like he blows the whistle and Liverpool have then got time to react to it. It doesn't sit right with me.
Well, I watched it back when we got back that evening, and there's lots of talk. Even before this match, there's been a lot of talk about Atkinson, his performances when we play, our record when he's refereeing our matches is so much worse than any other referee in the Premier League. The interesting thing, like Emma, you were talking before we started filming, like, yeah, we should do better. We should be prepared. And it even felt in real time that Adrian was taking a little more time than he should have. But when you watch it back, Atkinson is looking right at him, at our keeper, saying like, okay, blows the whistle. He was fully aware that we weren't set up. Yeah. And again, yeah, full credit to Dunk. It was a great, great take. And he deserves the goal, every right to take it, but I think there has to be a hint of maliciousness.
It feels shady to me, Steve.
It feels like
it was another referee. The problem is it's Martin Atkinson, and so it feels like, and we've all got this, we all love a good conspiracy theory and all that kind of stuff, the body of evidence about Martin Atkinson and Liverpool is massive.
It looks, again, I don't know, obviously you can't hear, but looking back, it looks like Dunk says, can I take this quick? And Atkinson says no. But then he walks behind him and then blows his whistle. Usually I would, again, I don't know what the rules are, but you would expect the ref to, like, sometimes he'll hold his whistle up to everyone, say, I'm waiting. Or you might give the goalie a nod, like, I'm about to blow this whistle. Yeah. he can't wait to blow that whistle. He knows that Dunk wants to take it, so he can't. And maybe that influences him a little bit. Yeah. His positioning's horrible. He's got no. There's this new rule where you're not allowed people in the wall, and Brighton have got someone in the wall. Yeah. But from where he is, he can't see that. His job, once he denies that, he says, "No, you're not having it." He's meant to walk around. He's meant to get side on. Because he's meant to be checking for that. No one checks it. The lad's in the wall. Technically, it's not a goal. I think it's a bit cry-arse to complain about it because it's one of them.
Yeah.
But when the ref denies the quick free kick, I think we're all ingrained to the ref's now got to make his way round, and then he'll do that thing where he goes, because all refs love doing that. And then they blow their whistle. He just starts walking, and he goes, yeah, blow whistle.
No, go ahead, I'm where I want to be. I've got a good view of this. Yeah, I know. Oh, I'm right behind this one. Oh, I just got to look great.
We've got both teams to score. It's very odd. Like, it's an odd sequence in that I think, listen, we all laud the Alexander-Arnold Origi corner, I'm not going to cry out. It's brilliant from Brighton. I thought it was really clever. Yeah. But you are conditioned. There's not only footballers, but football fans, is that when the ref says no quick one, you then have to wait for him to be in position. A ref, you never expect a ref to be walking, blowing the whistle. It's just odd. And everyone switched off.
It's the wall thing as well.
The wall's a disgrace.
I've got no problem with it at all.
Right. Yeah, that's fine.
At all. I thought it was brilliant. I want to see more of that in football. Like, just quick football. Like, football for me, at like the top level, is reacting to these kind of things. And yeah. I get what you're saying. Like, you're conditioned to do this. Common sense and all that kind of stuff, but I thought it was brilliant. I want to see more of that. Like, yeah,
it's not against us.
this is the thing. It's because it's against like your team that you're like, ah. Oh. But like when Trent did that, like you say, like that was one of the best moments in football. Yeah. I loved it. I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah, again, you're right. And again, if we're gonna nitpick, I'd say the wall thing. I don't understand the rule enough to be able to.
You meant to have like a separate wall. Mm-hmm.
But for me, it's just that thing of. I mean, for fuck's sake, you've just dropped the goal. He's not warmed up. Like, they could have legitimately asked him.
But that's Liverpool's fault, though. Like, he should be warmed up.
No, but that's not Liverpool's fault. That's just when the goalkeepers don't.
Yeah, I get that. But in terms of elite football, he should be.
But the point is, that he's walked onto the pitch.
Yeah.
He is essential to what's happening there.
Yeah.
You can see.
Our setup of that was is a joke, because there's no goalie to do it. But maybe in hindsight, someone stand on top of the ball until the ref. Yeah. Someone stand there because you know your goalie's coming on. Don't let them take it. So one of your centre forward should be standing on it.
Yeah.
And maybe someone else could be lining the wall up because.
Yeah, like, I'm not being funny, but you've got Van Dijk and Henderson on the pitch. Yeah. Like one of them, just line up the wall.
The reason that it takes so long is that the wall is miles away. Like I don't know whose job it is to go. I wonder if I should be on that. Whoever's on the end of the wall,
yeah.
Because it's like 3 foot wrong.
Yeah,
it's just Stevie Wonder could see that's not a good wall. Yeah. It's like just every why is, and he's got move over and everyone's just ignoring them.
Yeah.
All that being said, if defenders could set the wall. Goalkeepers wouldn't do it every single time,
and
you'd be amazed how poor defenders are at certain ball positions.
Yeah. It's crazy
because you judge it, and maybe it's changed, but you'd always judge the second from the outside should be in line with your post. Mm. Basically, is always the rule of thumb on it. But again, you're right. It's cry arson. It doesn't seem sportsmanlike for me, particularly the situation. If it's Alisson's in goal for it, then I've got no problem with it because he's there. He's been there the whole time. The lad's walked on the pitch, setting the wall. He's in the middle of setting the wall, and the referee blows the thing. It's like, mate, you know.
I think I've refereed in the past, and I would in that situation. If I think a goalie's taking too long, I will say goalie. I will just say goalie, and I'm showing the whistle. Like I say. Get yourself back because I'm about to blow it. And then he will run across, whether it's wall set or not. So I do get it. I think he's a bad ref. He's a bad... That's the bottom line of it. And again, it just doesn't help. I think Michael Oliver doesn't blow that whistle. I think he goes, I've denied you the quick one. I'm going to waltz around and I'm going to make sure everything's spot on. Yeah. Because that big... Their left back, who's like a giant, by the way, size of him, he's just standing on the end of the wall anyway. So a good ref would have gone... stop you out. Spray the second line.
Yeah.
No, and I think it just catches Liverpool.
Bearing in mind the position where we saw Aubameyang having to retake a penalty at the weekend because of encroachment, that kind of stuff, like the little finickety things in the laws that aren't being. This is one of the senior referees in the country. It might be nothing. He might
do
that every single week against all kinds of different opponents in all kinds of different situations. But I'm entitled to have this opinion on Martin Atkinson because I've built this opinion up of him over the years. And when he does something like that in those situations, it feels vindictive for some reason. Again, I'd be laughing my tits off if someone did this against City
Dunk sees it straight away because he asks straight away.
Oh, it's brilliant.
He says, can I take the free kick? And the ref says no. And then as soon as he blows his whistle, he waves to his mate, think out the way. Like, you know, like when you're onto something and you know no one else is, like, I think I've got a goal here, Yeah. He knows he scored.
He'll be telling his grandkids, I passed the ball into the bottom corner.
he knew 10 seconds before, I've got a goal here.
The only other thing about it is Adrian should throw himself at it.
Yeah.
But again, the problem is he's not warmed up. So your body, it's weird, it is a weird thing.
Yeah, you just don't react to it.
You can't make yourself do that if you're not, it sounds stupid, but it's true. Yeah, like, no, I mean, for God's sake, he was still doing like high kicks to warm up before taking goal kicks like fucking 5 minutes later. It was a bit of a joke.
Are we going to talk about him nearly throwing in a goal?
That was brilliant.
I don't know where I said it, but that performance from Adrian was exactly the kind of level of performance I expected from him when we signed him. I expected him to be spilling footies, miss kicking, goal kicking. You know, I expected him to be crap. That was the Adrian we deserve, not the one we got.
He makes a couple of good saves, actually. That drop.
Yeah, he does.
I just, it might be, especially when you wear your same pants, right there. It looks like it's about to roll in. Mm-hmm. Like, I never thought that the other guy was going to get it, the oncoming striker, but I thought that is just going to creep over the line.
It was like watching Karius again.
You mentioned before about Van Dijk in slow motion. That ball moved so slowly, thankfully. It was so slow that he managed to jump on it. I love that. And he's on the floor and he goes, sorry. and he just puts his hand up and goes, I am so sorry, that was so bad. And it's like he doesn't want to look at anyone. He's like, just puts his hand up, I am really bad.
He's basically gone, right, Alisson's had his fun today, I need to have my fun today. I can't come off this pitch without giving everyone a heart attack.
He made another save where he laid on the ground and just gave a thumbs up. I don't know if there's a great shot of that.
I love seeing a photo of that.
Just a laying down hand signal.
It was horrendous, wasn't it? So nervous. But again, I said at the top, it nearly played into this notion of excitement because I wasn't expecting it. I wasn't ready for it. I was ready to I'd mentally written it all, and Liverpool cruised to a 2-0 win and blah, 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 blah. And then it all became really exciting. And I think they're the kind of games that make you feel alive. Yeah. I wouldn't mind a few that make me feel slightly less alive, you know what I mean, if that's the case.
Do you think we dealt well with 10 from there? I thought we did a good job. Like, I would have thought that he'd have had to be making save after save. He has a couple, but they're from quite far out, and then he obviously has that, which is a bad header. He throws it in. But I thought the way Liverpool got themselves into shape, went 4-4-1, and basically just said, all we're doing here is just kicking it dead far away as far as we can.
Well, you know who was good, actually. I thought Adam Lallana really helped in that.
At the end, that one he covers around the back.
There's a couple where he's obviously playing in midfield, Patrick, and he busts a gut twice, and one of them we end up, I think we get a throw in or a court, or I think it's a throw in from it, and like everyone gets, you know, we were celebrating throw ins by the end of that game. Yeah. But this is the thing, you know, we talk about, we take games for granted. Mm-hmm. The performance that the shift that we put in at 10 men, I thought that's the thing. I'm not so much made up with the fact that we ended up in that situation. I'm so pleased with the attitude that the team showed in that situation.
Well, I mean, when was the last time we were down to 10 men? It's been, we have such a good record from a discipline standpoint that it just doesn't happen very often. Yeah. So it was weird in just to see us, you know,
weird that when Alisson went to go off, I couldn't figure out why Adrian wasn't coming straight on for him, and then I was like,
I've ever said
on video, by the way. I was like, oh my god, obviously we've got a sub playing, I'm not swapping the keepers.
My first thing was, oh my god, we got a sub. I wasn't sure if we'd used, again, Tom knows up this life well, counting subs. I thought, I really hope we've got another sub, because I was thinking a split second was, who goes in goal?
Oh, Virg.
I've got no idea.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I want to see that now. Goal. Adrian needs to get sent off against Everton.
I think Chamberlain would have won in goal.
Yeah. Oh. We had a Lallana on the pitch at that point, didn't we?
I think
Oxford. Is he meant to be a good in goal?
Oh, fact, Hendo?
Nah.
Go on. So who would we have?
Ox, probably. Ox or Virgil. I mean, Virgil will probably walk to the ball and then just pick it up.
Robbo.
And save it.
I think Robbo will be a good keeper.
Trent looks like he could go in goal. Degsy would be hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
Lovren. Lovren. That's what I want. I want Lovren in goal. Yeah. I was just thinking, I got one. And then thankfully the camera cut rather quickly to what I'm doing, getting, like you said, forgetting that he was actually there to play. Yeah. Oh, shit.
To be fair, like, Firmino would probably save it with like a kung fu kick.
A no-look save.
Yeah, no-look kung fu.
Yeah.
31 unbeaten. 40 points. That magic 40-point position.
We're not getting relegated.
Safety assured for one more season. Just great. Absolutely great. And, you know, we were looking at the league table, Patrick, and there was a point, and it actually, because of Man United's result, I think we're 22 points ahead of Manchester United.
Crazy.
22. On Saturday night, I could, my brain could not comprehend the league table that I was looking at, and Everton capitulating in the most Everton way ever, you know, does change things a little bit. But, you know, we were very nearly, 10 points clear at the top of the Premier League?
And 11 in front of City. I think we were in the concourse right before the match, watching the City game, and that was the best way to walk into Anfield and be like, okay, let's go get this done. I think I was a little tickled last night reading Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's comments after their game, where he said he's not too concerned about the league table because of how tight it is, but we're 22 points ahead of them after 14 matches.
Yeah.
And that's just, you just want to inject that straight, into
there are
the
teams
veins.
In this league, Paul, who won't get 40 points this season, and we've got it. Like less than half.
If you extrapolate that out, we're going to end up like 60 points ahead of United.
Was it Cy Brundish tweeted something saying like we can afford to lose, like I can't remember how many games he said,
lose two, draw three, and still get
98 points or something, which is crazy.
I mean, the big gap is what fun it is. It's 11 ahead of City.
Yeah.
At 11, 11 points after 14 games is just out of this world. It's as much as you could ask for. Like you say.
It's not even the end of December yet.
Exactly. That's what I mean.
Mad, isn't it?
It's 11 points in the first weekend. It's absolutely bananas. It just shows, like, when you play badly and get points, you're stacking these wins and you're stacking these 3 points. Where City don't play well and they've drawn or they've got beat, and it's just huge pressure. So basically, City have got a better result in 4 games. If it was the other way around, I'd be like, well, that's that gone.
Yeah.
But that's dead.
I would feel it was impossible to claw back 11 points to Manchester City. But this is another example of a game where a little bit of adversity looks self-inflicted this time around, but, you know, and coming out, and it makes you feel more confident about the whole situation. It's insane.
It's what the old Man United teams used to do, and it used to bug everyone so much because they play awful and then get like a 1-0.
But looking at that game, me and Chris had it on the radio driving to there. Like, we turned the car off when we parked up, and we turned it back on, and it was 2-1. We all forget that. What's the goal on phones? Okay, that's a hell of a goal from De Bruyne. Mm-hmm. You know, what are you going to do? Fair play. We'll have exerted themselves, but they've got the 3 points. We weren't expecting to get anything from Newcastle. So we didn't think anything of it until we got to the ground and we met up with Ross, and he was like, have you seen the score? We're like, 2-1, shame. No, 2-0.
Ross is running around downfield like this. John Shelby.
Just amazing.
Yeah, who'd have thought you'd be singing the Shelby song in the car at the end of the day?
Absolutely, but that was the thing about it. You know, City dropping those points, and just to go and, again, notwithstanding post the red card, the way we handled that game, it didn't. You know, every time City have dropped points last season, Patrick, I think we were all so nervous, and you'd see Liverpool just not. Just not being at the races, just being a little bit off or whatever, because maybe the pressure was getting to them. You never got a sense of that at all.
No, not at all. I think last season it was really stressful. I watched almost every City game just praying. One, they're going to drop points here, they're going to drop points here. And then I remember the match against Leicester where Kompany just hit that ridiculous
goal.
I mean, that was a heartbreaking moment. And this season I decided, I'm like, I'm just not going to watch. I don't want to go through that. And we're in a place now where they've dropped two fewer points right now than they did all of last season after 14 matches. Mm. So there's no catching us this year. I think it's just...
It certainly starts to feel that way. And, you know, the only thing that stopped it being a perfect weekend of football, and it's on personal preference, this, by the way.
Marco Silva.
Because, like, Everton being in that situation, being a goal up, and you're thinking, ooh, and I watched that game. I actually quite enjoyed watching that game as well.
I was disappointed.
Because, look, ultimately... As much as I dislike Everton,
Rather win the league.
I'd rather have been in as comfortable a position in the league. Yeah. I'd rather have a 10-point gap to Leicester. You got the impression, Steve, judging by this, because I've seen a lot of people going, they just look at them celebrating, you know, a win against Everton. They're celebrating that win because it's an incredible way to win a game of football, but also because I think they knew that if they didn't get that win,
that was the
title race. Yeah. Over.
It's odd that they're in the title race, isn't it? But that's the situation we find ourselves in. Ultimately, mate, at this stage of the season, I'm quite happy for Everton to lose. We'll probably play them anyway, so it's actually quite funny. If it was any other manager standing there on the sidelines, I said I'd have felt sorry for him, but I don't. So Leicester are a good team. They are really good, and they're resilient as well. They are going to be in and around it. Listen, if I would fancy us in a head-to-head shootout with Leicester, and the general conversation I keep hearing on radios and talk shows or whatever it is, Leicester are 3 points better off now than when they won the league. Fantastic. You will not win the league with that points total. If you want to overhaul Liverpool, you are going to have to get
100 points.
I think we're going to get...
95 at least.
Yeah. I think we'll be somewhere between 93 and 97, I think Liverpool will end up. If Leicester can go and beat that, absolute fair play to use. It will be the greatest Premier League victory of all time.
The Man City thing's really interesting because we'll see. Look, that, you know, you can't.
City can just win 20.
Exactly. You can't discount Man City.
Man City, I think, are probably the best team we've had in Premier League history. So when you've got a team like that that are 11 points behind, you don't.
But we're on the precipice of being us. That's the thing.
This is it.
I was just looking at if you look like I keep thinking City might do, you know, like I said, go on a big run, but.
Yeah.
Burnley away, United at home, Arsenal away, Leicester at home, Wolves away. In years gone by, I'd have just put my house on them winning all them.
Yeah.
I wouldn't now.
Yeah.
Absolutely no chance. And that's the thing is that I was saying this.
There's blood in the water,
yeah.
I think.
Exactly. People can sense it. Newcastle knew quite well. Even if we just keep it close to last 10, listen, they might win a game because De Bruyne turns into Tony Yeboah. And absolutely fair play if he does that. Brilliant, well done.
For you. Everyone under the age of
25. I'm not going to lie, I'm like,
Google and Tony Yeboah, who are Leeds? Yeah. But you hang around them.
Yeah.
Because like you say, you can sense it. Teams used to play Liverpool knowing we can get something out of this.
Yeah.
Alan Pardew would turn up to Anfield and do it, because he knew.
Yeah.
Just frustrate them, keep it whatever, and then you might get something. And people are sensing that with Man City now.
Yeah, they're losing that air of like invincibility, yeah, which we've kind of got now.
Yeah,
it's like switched.
It'd just be an interesting thing because, let's use the Champions League last season as an example of this. When we were up against Real Madrid, Real Madrid's superior quality, maybe in terms of what they had on the pitch and experience and all that kind of stuff, is what helped them across the line on the day. And Carrius, obviously. but then when there's a sense of inevitability when you're coming into Tottenham, you're thinking, we should have this because we know what we're doing here a bit more. And yes, of course, Leicester have won the league more recently than Liverpool had. But it would be mad for us to end up in a title battle with only Leicester.
Not to win it.
That's what I mean. I would be, not relaxed, not like because I feel Leicester can't do it, because they're phenomenal. I was so impressed by how they conducted themselves.
Their squad's brilliant as well. The players they've got in that squad is brilliant.
Yeah. And no European football, so they've got more rest and stuff.
That's
the thing with them. And then we have to go to their place, which will never be easy. So
without Fabinho.
At the minute, I would be half writing City off. If it was any other team.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of the point I was making.
Because it's them.
Because it's them.
But it should be a two-horse race now. And even then, it's a two-horse race with an 8-point gap. Yeah. Like, it should be it. I put on Twitter the other day, in my head I'm thinking, well, that's the league. And then the little bad guy on my shoulder's going, Steve, you know, in May, I wonder how Liverpool are going to have fucked this up. What went wrong for you to just be sitting there like this?
What I think is funny is the amount of people who've come out going, didn't Liverpool have, and you know, this, and I've seen the points tally be different every single time. It's like people generally remember that we had a lead, a little bit of a lead at some point, but no one can truly remember what the parameters for it were.
Yeah, wasn't it 9 points, but City had a game in hand, and then we played City next.
Which is, so there's a massive difference between where we are now and then. But you're right, until Liverpool finally deliver a league title. We're all gonna have that little noise in the back of our head that goes, how does this go wrong? Yeah. It's like imposter syndrome.
And that's what's gonna be tough for the players as well.
Yeah.
And I think they know that. Yeah. And that's gonna be the test.
Logic dictates, Paul, is that it should be like when Chelsea won it under Conte's first season.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
When it was won in December,
but
it officially took them till spring to actually win it.
Yeah, yeah.
That logic dictates that's how this should be. It's like Liverpool should have that gap and it should grow and it should be double figures. And then you get to February, March, April, and then Liverpool should. There'll be a random game away in mid March, April. That's what logic dictates because of the run of points we're on and how everyone else is faltering. It's just that we're Liverpool fans. So this little voice is going, fuck, what's going to go wrong?
But this is the point, isn't it? And I say the imposter syndrome thing is that that's where we're at. You have it in every walk of life is that you don't know. Good, really talented people don't recognise that how talented they are sometimes. Like you mean, so you think they presume like the X Factor syndrome where they think, am I that weirdo who goes on there who tries to sing with his throat for whatever reason who thinks he's super talented? Is that me? But no, it turns out you're actually dead talented because we've been conditioned with this mentality of what are Liverpool going to do? How's this all going to fall apart? How's this going to break our heart? Whereas every week that team goes out there, it actually gives us yet more and more evidence that we're where we are because we deserve. This is not like when you have, I always reference it, how Blackpool were in like the top four for a little spell in the first season in the Premier League, and you know it's not going to last. It's a very weird mentality to be in. I'm not entirely comfortable with it, but I'd rather be in this position than any of the positions we've ever been in the Premier League. So. Yeah, take that. Right, yes, thank you very much, guys. That's been an absolute pleasure. Just a little matter of building up to a Merseyside derby to look forward to. That should be very good indeed. But yeah, thank you very much to people for joining us. If you want more of this, the Merseyside Derby Final Word Show will be on the redmentv.com. You can sign up for the first month. It's completely free. And then it's £5 a month thereafter. We've got all that. We've got stats and tactics. We've got the Reds News Roundup. We've got a whole host of amazing content coming up over the festive period as well. So make sure you get over there and sign up and support everything we do here. And in addition to that, do go to theathletic.co.uk/redmentv to get that 50% discount. Because it just makes us look really good. You want to make us look good, right? Unless you're one of those weirdos who watches us because they don't like us and you support another football club. Right, brilliant. Thank you very much. See you all very soon. Ta-da.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt, so throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.